Hello everybody, this is the translation of Joel's message for Sunday the 4th of June. I don't know if you've ever dreamed of one day seeing your name written in the Guinness Book of World Records, or in a list of people elected Personality of the Year, or, why not, in the books of history. The simple fact of having your name inscribed somewhere could in some cases have great significance and have lasting consequences for your whole life. The Bible makes numerous mentions of the inscribed name, and in the Old Testament there is a psalm in which this theme is central and which carries a particularly touching message. It is Psalm 87, which speaks of the city of Jerusalem, and which I suggest we read together. Psalm 87. He has founded his city on the holy mountain. The Lord loves the gates of Zion more than all the other dwellings of Jacob. Glorious things are said of you, city of God. I will record Rahab and Babylon among those who are acknowledged, who acknowledge me. Philistia too, and Tyre, along with Cush, and will say, this one was born in Zion. Indeed, of Zion it will be said, this one and that one were born in her, and the Most High himself will establish her. The Lord will write in the register of the peoples, this one was born in Zion. As they make music, they will sing, all my fountains are in you. Among the questions that arise in our society, there is the question of identity. We talk about the importance of discovering your true identity, of assuming your identity. And then we also talk a lot about the problems related to the question of identity, at the individual level and also at the social level. And in this very short psalm, there is an extraordinary message precisely in relation to identity. There are affirmations which are extremely strong already for the time when this psalm was written, and which are also so for us today in our situation as members of the people of God. And after having evoked a little the problem of identity, we will be able to discover in this psalm the new identity that God gives in view of a real identity. A real problem, in the Bible too. In the New Testament, by reading, for example, the letters of Paul to the Corinthians or to the Galatians, we realise that Christians of Gentile origin had a real problem of identity. They had become Christians, members of churches. They found themselves in a totally new situation, and so they had to adopt a whole new way of thinking and living. But what complicated things for them was that some Jews wanted to impose the law of Moses and its rites on them, circumcision, food, calendar, etc., so that they could be truly recognized and truly integrated into the church. This problem of identity among the Corinthians was already visible in the different clans that had formed within the community, and we see it from Paul's first words in the first chapter. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 11 to 13. My brothers and sisters, some from Chloe's household have informed me that there are quarrels among you. What I mean is this, one of you says, I follow Paul, another, I follow Apollos, another, I follow Cephas, still another, I follow Christ. Is Christ divided? Was Paul crucified for you? Were you baptized in the name of Paul? The Christians of Corinth, therefore, had difficulty in situating themselves in this new environment, which is the church, and they had fallen into the trap of identifying with one of the prominent figures in the church. When one is in search of identity, it happens that one claims someone by identifying with a person of reference. And all the efforts of Paul, the apostle of the Gentiles, will tend to help the Corinthians to understand what they have actually become in Jesus Christ. Help them to live according to the new status God has given them as children of God and as members of a body of which Christ is the head, and not a man, however important. And for this, one of the first things that Paul reminds them of is that they were called by God and filled by the grace of God, and that concerning their salvation and their relationship with God, they have no less than their Jewish brothers. A new identity. And 1,000 years before the Apostle Paul, Psalm 87 already expresses this very strong truth. The pagans are worth no less than the Jews. There is a very clear affirmation from the beginning, which is that of God's love for the city of Zion, which is Jerusalem. First of all, the city of Jerusalem is presented as founded on the holy mountains. That is to say that it is part of what belongs to God. It is the property of God. It is in this city of Jerusalem, capital of the kingdom of Judah, where the temple is located, the place par excellence where God communicates with his people. And then this city of Jerusalem is the object of a very privileged affection on the part of God. God cherishes what belongs to him, this city where he somehow resides in the midst of his people. Verse 2, the Lord loves the gates of Zion more than all the other dwellings of Jacob. And finally, this city of Jerusalem, city of God, also has something unique. In verse 3, glorious things are said of you, city of God. And this is where we get to the extraordinary, because what is said then about Jerusalem is completely unexpected. The subject of glory of the city of Jerusalem that God cherishes is not its greatness and its power, the wealth of its trade or its activities, nor either the splendour of its temple, which would rival the buildings of remarkable civilizations that surround it. Jerusalem had none of that. No, the glory of Jerusalem is the fact that it is declared by God himself as the birthplace of a whole series of foreigners, Gentiles, who by nature have no connection with Jerusalem and Israel. Verse 4. I will record Rahab and Babylon among those who acknowledge me, Philistia too, and Tyre along with Cush, and will say, this one was born in Zion. So here it is worth picturing the scene. With these few words, this psalm allows us to imagine very concretely God himself in person as the supreme authority of this city of Jerusalem, which keeps the register of the civil registry, and which takes the initiative to register as citizens by right of the holy city, nationals of peoples who not only have nothing to do with Israel, but who are even, for the most part, its enemies by hereditary. And it is then that from Egypt, the land of slavery, from Babylon, the great enemy and the city, which will become that of the deportation, from the land of the Philistines, the people of Goliath, the sworn enemies of Israel, Ethiopia, the land of a completely different culture, some suddenly find themselves with proper passports and recognized by God as native citizens of Jerusalem. It is surely a little difficult for us to put ourselves in the shoes of an Israelite of that time and to imagine the shock that such a statement could cause. In the book of Ezra, in chapter 2, we read that on their return from exile in Babylon, the first group of citizens of Judah will have to provide formal proof of their citizenship to have the right to live in Jerusalem. And the account specifies that those who were not found in the genealogical registers were disqualified, in any case, for the exercise of the priesthood. And here in this psalm, it's the world turned upside down, if we dare to say. It is people from elsewhere, Gentiles of other nations, and even among the enemies who receive a new birth certificate and a new identity as members of the city of God, and this on the initiative of God. And why? for the sole reason that they know God. Verse 4, among all who know me. This means that God redistributes the cards and redefines for each one in particular the notions of identity and belonging. Here are the main lessons of this passage. It is thanks to his personal relationship with God that everyone can discover his true identity. It is God who defines the identity of each one and not the way of looking or the judgment of others. This means that whatever his origins, his family and social background, his culture, whoever has given his life to God and recognizes him as his father finds himself without other conditions benefiting from this new alliance of which the Old Testament announced the coming already very clearly. A covenant signed by God, sealed and guaranteed by the sacrifice of Christ, with no other condition than faith, without human intermediary, and without consideration of origins and peculiarities. God's plan is to unite and bring together under the same name with a birth certificate, bearing the same signature, within a single family, a single people, all those who claim his grace. A new identity for a real unity. Gathering unity within a very real diversity of origins, this is indeed the avowed goal that God proposes to himself from his call to Abraham. Genesis chapter 22, verse 18. And through your offspring all nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me. We must never lose sight of the fact that the original project of God from the time he called Abraham was to constitute a people that belonged to him, but not from a single earthly people, not a people of only one ethnicity, but a people from all peoples of the earth. Last Sunday was Pentecost, and Pentecost in Jerusalem 2,000 years ago is the birth of the church and the beginning of the great realization of this ultimate plan of God. And Psalm 87 is a magnificent illustration, well in advance, of the revelations of the New Testament. The message of the Epistle to the Hebrews makes an explicit mention of this revelation. In chapter 11, the author says about Abraham, the leader of this long line, that he was looking forward to the city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 10. And he does this by listing all those who have put their trust in God, the heroes of the faith, and who are not all originally members of the people of Israel. There is Rahab, the prostitute of Jericho, the Canaanite. And we read in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 22 and 23, but you have come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. You have come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly, to the church of the firstborn, whose names are written in heaven. You have come to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of the righteous made perfect. This is the city founded by God, of which Psalm 87 speaks. In conclusion, the people of God, a people united forever. This is the reality of the church, the initiative of God, privilege of all believers, and at the same time a real challenge to take up, a reality to build and live. Psalm 87 is a magnificent anticipation of the heavenly Jerusalem described at the end of Revelation. It reminds us, Christians of the 21st century, that we are born into the house of God, born of God, of a new birth, and that with all those who have gone before us and all those who will come after us, we are united under the same identity of the children of God, members of an immense family which will be totally visible one day. Unity, the one for which Jesus prayed, is the privilege granted to the church to be able to demonstrate to the world that it exists beyond all divisions or all identities, beyond all barriers and all forms of discrimination, a real fraternity, And it is in our small local family here in Bergerac, at our modest level, that we can all together practice living this reality that Paul describes to the Colossians. Colossians chapter 3, verses 11 to 14. Here there is no Gentile or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is all as and is in all. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you, and over all these virtues put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Let's sing, "Yes, we belong to the family of God." Amen.